You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Let's Talk Macro, the podcast on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and events. I'm your co-host Ahalya, and I've got with me Srijit Balasubramanian, senior economist in the fixed income fund management team, as always. Hi Srijit, how are you?
Ahalya, I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing well. Another month, another rundown. Excited about what's on the table today because it's something we haven't discussed actually for the past couple of months. So I'm sure it's going to be good to dive into. You know, we've spoken about the West Asia conflict, the challenges it poses for India and the world, how central banks have been responding and our expectations on monetary policy. We've also discussed the AI theme. Another factor which merits attention amidst all the noise, though, is China. So today we're going to talk about the latest economic situation in China and why this matters for the world, including for us back home here in India. So Srijit, let's set the tone by figuring out the latest numbers and whether the trends point to any change in the economic backdrop. We have previously discussed the economic slowdown in China. So what's the latest on the situation?
Okay, so sort of a one-word answer on China's current growth situation will be just slow. In a sense that, you know, the recent data has been quite soft. And it sort of points to continued slowdown in China's growth. The June quarter real GDP grew around 4.3% year-on-year. And that is within the 4.5% to 5% official target. But it is the slowest in more than 3 years. And you know, a host of indicators. So, I mean, I can go on and on. So, for instance, growth in fixed asset investment has been deeply negative. And, you know, that's primarily driven by the weak real estate investments happening there. Industry real value addition and freight movement have been quite soft. New home prices are declining again. I mean, that continues to happen. And unsold developer inventory and resale listings remain high. PMI data, again, suggests compression of, you know, manufacturers' profit margins. And even if you see on the consumer side, again, credit growth is moderating, particularly for bank loans to consumers. Retail sales of consumer goods has been weak. In fact, the growth there turned negative a few months back. That continues to remain soft even now. Passenger auto sales growth is again negative. And consumer confidence continues to again remain weak. As you know, even unemployment is quite high. And we know the kind of wealth that people have invested in real estate. It's around 70% of household wealth is in real estate sector. So that continues to remain a major area of issue. So it's a weakness which is quite broad-based, you know, across industrial and consumer sectors. And this is reflecting in inflation also. So headline and core CPI is now below 1%, and this has been falling. Even producer price index was also negative. But there's been a recent rise in energy prices, so that has lifted the PPI a little bit, but it's still quite soft. So fundamentally, if you see property sector and consumer demand continues to be, you know, major drags on the Chinese economy, and the data you know, clearly shows this. The silver lining, though, has been trade, that is exports.
Okay, interesting. So if we're going to just pick up from where we left off, which is also to discuss policy response, you know, when we last talked about it, policy response to the issues were not really big bang. Is that still the same, or is there anything new on that front?
Yeah, so still no big bang measures to address you know, the weak demand or to clear the unsold property inventory. We had the consumer trade-in scheme, if you remember, that was launched back in 2024. And continued until very recently, which only front-loaded the demand per se, you know, for home appliances, electronics, and so on. But the demand thereafter moderated. The central bank intervention has been, if you see in terms of its one-year and five-year loan prime rates, that has been unchanged for some time. And that is a primary reference rate for bank loans to households and businesses. And it has cut the reserve requirement ratio, the RRR, you know, quite a few times. And it has also used lending guidance and liquidity operations a little more. But this does not resolve the underlying problem, you know, which fiscal policy has to address. The recent Politburo meeting in July again called for a more proactive fiscal policy, but it in fact dropped last year's mention on special initiatives rather to boost consumption. Although there have been calls to counter-cyclically boost consumption, the focus now seems to be more on tech and AI investment, you know, and self-sufficiency there, not really on large-scale demand stimulus. So the Chinese government sees this as a period of transition, you know, between the old and new growth drivers. So they understand that there'll be a gap, but I guess the effort and hope is that new tech can create positive effects which will sort of, you know, be well distributed as well. And it's more like short-term pain for long-term gain. But like I said, again, in the meantime, exports are continuing to do quite well.
Yeah, short-term pain for long-term gain is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So consumer and the property sector remain weak, while tech and AI hopefully can just sort of carry everyone forward. Could you talk to us a little bit more about the export scenario now, though, which, you know, has been doing well, like you said, unlike other data. So how is that playing out and what are the implications of positive growth on exports?
So the strong export numbers, in a way, reflect China's underlying problems, you know, which is mainly the high debt and overcapacity in various sectors. And when that sort of combines with the weak consumer demand currently, you know, which is there cyclically, it means it is relying heavily on exporting its surplus to other countries. So goods export growth, I think in the June quarter was up around 20% year on year. And even July was up more than that, you know, around 23-24%. And with AI and renewables doing quite well in exports. Even export of machinery and, you know, transport equipment and chemicals and some of those traditional areas have also been doing well. And this has been the case for exports to several countries, except to the US, which has tariffed some of the Chinese goods. So if you see China's exports to Europe, the ASEAN, that is the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, Indonesia, Malaysia, and so on, India, and even South Korea have all been growing quite strongly. And if you see China's overall trade surplus, that crossed 1 trillion in 2025 last year itself. And if you compare it with the trade surplus it had back in 2019, that is pre-pandemic, it's almost, you know, three times now. So this is one of the reasons this is often called the second China shock, you know, because Chinese goods, cheaper Chinese goods that is, often produced with manufacturing incentives that are given by the government there. You know, this could sort of flood into other countries and reduce prices there, but also make their companies less competitive, right? And even unviable in some cases. And therefore, domestic private investment and growth takes a hit. And in fact, some studies have shown that a rise in export of Chinese goods tariffed by US is actually going to Europe. So there'll be these first and second round impacts on growth and inflation around the world because of the Chinese export phenomenon.
Okay, so oversupply and then weak domestic demand in China are making its way to other countries, which is, you know, a pretty large data point, actually, Shijit. So how does that impact us in India specifically? And also, how has China-India trade evolved in the last few years? And do we also face such implications like the rest of the world?
Yeah, so we also face the impact of higher imports from China. Of course, it varies across sectors and goods. India's trade deficit with China has also doubled since the pandemic, with import really picking up in the 2021-22 period, just after the onset of the pandemic. Our trade deficit with China and Hong Kong, if you see together, was around, I think, $50+ billion in 2019, which is now 120 plus. And this is roughly one third of our total trade deficit. And we also did some recent study on this. So if you look at from 2019 to 2025, in the 6 years, India's exports to China grew at an average annual rate of around 3% or just under 3%. And while imports from China grew at over 12%, right? And the bigger factor that is that the import numbers are much bigger. So around 130 billion plus, which is seven times the export numbers. And even that has grown much more. So the rise in imports, if you see across categories, and that is also quite broad-based, you know, across electronics, telecom, machinery, chemicals, and so on. And so this is something that we definitely need to keep track of. And like I said, just like for the rest of the world, it is disinflationary in a sense, but it reduces our domestic investment and production and growth. So that's something that we need to be wary of.
Right. So India's trade deficit with China has also risen across industries with implications for inflation and growth. That was quite the rundown. And with that, it's time for me to summarize the key takeaways. First of all, China's property sector and consumer demand remain major headwinds. Data on credit, investments, retail sales, auto sales, and many more continue to point to a sluggish economy. Second point of note, policy measures also remain marginal, not going for a large-scale demand stimulus despite some calls for counter-cyclical measures. Tech and AI are seen as the new growth drivers, whereas self-sufficiency, in which is expected to create positive effects that percolate into the broader economy. And finally, China's exports have risen strongly in the last few years, and this reflects its overcapacity in industries and weak consumer demand. Although disinflationary, this has created global tensions because it impacts their domestic industries by making them less competitive, which reduces private capex and thus growth, something which India also needs to keep tabs on as our trade deficit with China has risen sharply. Power-packed episode, Srijit, short and sweet, but full of very important insights. So thank you for taking us through all of that.
Thank you, Helia. My pleasure.
All right. We'll be back with another episode of Let's Talk Macro next month. Until then, bye-bye.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.